The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 3 minutes past nine on this Monday, and it is the 24th of August. You're very welcome along to another week, another edition of the Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio. And it's another cracker, another busy one for you. We look forward to your company over the next hour and 57 minutes. Lots to talk about. You can get involved in the conversation, or maybe there's something that happened over the weekend or something you observed that you want us to talk about. Get in touch. 086 60 25000. If you're outside the Republic, it's 00353 86 60 25000. Give us a call on 07491 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. You're welcome to watch the show if that suits you. And maybe it'll suit you more when the children go back to school if you work from home or in the home, because we're available on your smart TV or your Fire Stick plugged into your TV. Just search the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, and we're there. And we're streaming across Facebook and on the X platform as well. So we're everywhere you might want to listen or watch. Let's start with the papers today. The Derry People, Donegal News. A man who escaped death in a near-drowning tragedy has welcomed an initiative. It's an innovative initiative that will help to save lives. Donegal will be the first county in Ireland to benefit from the innovation. Brian Carr from Glenties, you might remember, we spoke to him after this incident. He's a councillor as well, of course. He had to be rescued last August in waters between Ardra and Narron. Well, Brian, who is a Donegal County councillor, has since encouraged creation of measures to improve coastal rescue missions. He described this new initiative as an important initiative that will save lives. He also revealed that Donegal is to be the first county nationwide to have from the innovation, or it must be to benefit from the, or to have the innovation. So we'll dig into that a little bit more to see what that's all about. On to the Derry news. Funeral of Derry fire victim to take place today. The man who died in a fire at a property in Derry last week has been named locally as Noel Rogers. Mr. Rogers, who was in his 60s, died suddenly after a fire at his flat in Bloomfield Park on Wednesday afternoon. If you were a regular listener to this programme, you would have heard me say that there was absolutely no way the government were going to be increasing the cost of fuel from the end of this month. It was never going to happen, and I couldn't understand why they would have allowed the opposition to make it sound like they put pressure on them to not do it, or why the government would have allowed further threats of protest to be made before they were going to make their inevitable decision. This is the question, or the confusion I have about communication in politics, because as I say, they have the headroom. They could have done it. They were always going to do it, but they waited until it felt like they were being called on to do it, which I don't really understand. That would just be a little bit of advice to the government. It was obvious. Why did you allow it to come across like someone else was making the decision for you? But anyway, the continuation of fuel excise cuts to be approved by the Dáil next Friday will not affect the forthcoming budget. Cost associated with maintaining excise cuts on petrol and diesel have been estimated at about 100 million a month, according to sources familiar with recent decisions among coalition leaders. There is general agreement among ministers that the government could not be responsible for bringing the price of petrol or diesel above €2 a litre. A review of pricing is likely before any future reversal, with €2 per litre set as a tipping point. And again, you know, we've had this conversation on this programme 2-3 years ago, that €2 was the psychological figure. If you listen regularly, you would have heard me mentioning it. And now that has been that has become the case. The government now will always try as much as it can to keep petrol and diesel under that €2 mark. We've been conditioned to sort of almost see anything starting with a one as not so bad, even though price of fuel is through the roof. Well, with prices of diesel currently in the low 190s on forecourts, the now paused reversal of excise cuts next week would have brought the price above €2 per litre. Cam Corla, Verona Murphy notified TDs on Friday that the Dáil would meet next Friday at noon on foot of a request from the Taoiseach. So it's effectively the worst kept secret in politics, but there you go. I'd be very interested to find out what the Donegal situation is. The Irish Independent has done a survey of childcare. And it makes for very, very difficult reading for anyone who's trying to work to pay a mortgage or to meet other monthly costs. But I don't know what this... I genuinely don't really know what the situation here is in Donegal in terms of creche places, waiting lists and costs. And if you're out there, I would really appreciate... So, I mean, we're obviously... inquiring within the industry ourselves, but I would love to know what the situation is locally, because often we get a national overview in the papers and things can be better or worse here. Well, the vast majority of creches have waiting lists of over a year, with the average monthly fee now €845. That's though before state subsidies apply. The Irish Independent surveyed 142 creches, finding 117 had waiting lists of at least 1 year. Some claimed they had over 200 children looking for a place. Providers claimed parents had called looking for creche places from the hospital days after giving birth. Others had babies put on the waiting list before they were even born. Many creches have been forced to close their waiting lists. Such is the level of demand. And the Irish Independent contacted creches across Ireland posing as parents seeking a space for a child, which is a waste of creche's time, but I suppose if that's what they had to do. Creches were asked about waiting lists, how much their weekly fees were before state subsidies, and their views on core funding, a government grant for providers that goes towards operational costs to help keep fees low. So again, are there waiting lists? Maybe you're within the creche sector as well too. I'd be very interested to hear. So we're hearing monthly fees, €845, which is more than a lot of people listening's mortgage. That would be the fees, but there are government subsidies, of course. Ringing from the hospital with your brand new baby trying to reserve a creche space. Does that go on up here or in and around this area? Let me know. 086 60 25,000 in confidence, or call us on 074 91 25,000. The Irish Daily Star today. And I'll just mention an awful 7 people killed in a crash in England, which was to all intents and purposes almost the exact same as the crash that cost 5 lives and left 4 people very seriously injured. Cops ended their chase after a car before its runway crashed into another police car that killed 7, including 2 officers. The UK's Independent Office for Police Conduct said yesterday that Cleveland police officers had aborted their pursuit of a Volkswagen Passat before the crash. Now, it's not been explained very well, but they were chasing this Passat through side roads. It then turned onto a motorway. They stopped at that point the chase because they were heading the wrong way up the motorway. And within 10 seconds, another police car, which was heading towards the area to offer support to their colleagues, they went head on into each other. So that's why the 10 seconds sounds like, ooh, that sounds a bit, but that's the framing of the event. So they turned into the traffic and almost immediately struck this other police vehicle. Unfortunately as well, 5 lives lost in the other car, but these guys had a reputation, or at least some of them, for stealing vehicles. And again, videoing the theft of vehicles, videoing the police chases and posting those videos up online for likes and fame, etc. Now, this morning, as I do, opened up the phone, went through the usual websites I went on to TikTok. And again, it's still in my For You sort of algorithm. It's video after video of young men speeding in cars, evading police, in cars, hotwiring cars. So in other words, with all the conversation that's happening, we've had 2 massive tragedies now at this point. Social media companies are still promoting young people evading police and Gardaí and driving recklessly and that type of behaviour. And it's still being pushed to me because that's what the algorithm thinks that I'm interested in. I did note one slight change to it. Most of the videos had all the footage, but also were being sending messages of road safety. It's kind of peculiar, as if they're finding a way around the algorithm. But anyway, TikTok still pushing this content. Tens of thousands of likes on the videos that were fed to me this morning. But social media companies in the Star here again are endangering society by failing to remove content that depicts dangerous and illegal activity. So just to put this into context, if you, a man or a woman, were to create a video on TikTok and flash your bits and pieces, that would be removed within seconds and you'd be banned from the platform because they have guidelines in relation to that. So it wouldn't be done by a person. The AI would be able to ascertain that there was some sort of nudity or inappropriate visuals, and instantly that imagery would be taken down off TikTok. They could do this straight away if they wanted to with these types of videos, is the point I'm trying to make. They have the AI that can do that. But anyway, social media companies are endangering society by failing to remove content that depicts dangerous and illegal activity, a cabinet minister had said. There has been increased attention on social media regulation after the five teenagers died when their car was travelling the wrong way down the M9 and collided head-on with another vehicle, seriously injuring three women and a boy from the same family. The incident has drawn commentary about videos that have been posted on social media featuring youngsters driving dangerously. Peter Burks, the Enterprise Minister, he was commenting on it. I'm told, by the way, that those three women have a tough journey ahead of them, but it is hoped that they'll make a full physical recovery from their injuries. The emotional toll would be far more difficult to get over, I'd imagine. The Irish Daily Mail: Fianna Fáil backbenchers fear they'll be forced to vote against funding for a drug to treat Frederick's ataxia, just weeks after publicly calling for it to be reimbursed by the state. A large campaign has been mounted to secure funding for Skyclarys to treat the condition, which affects around 200 people in the country. However, this month, the HSE Drugs Evaluation Group, the National Centre for Pharmaceutical Economics, did not recommend the state pay for the drug, which would cost around €200,000 per patient per year. All members of the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party, apart from Junior Minister Catherine Arda, signed a letter calling on the state to pay for the drug. But with the Dáil returning in September, Fianna Fáil TDs now expect an opposition motion to be tabled calling for the drug to be funded, putting pressure on government TDs who want it approved by the HSC. A tricky one. It's a very serious issue and hopefully it gets resolved and this may help. But that's an interesting motion for the opposition to have as a new Dáil gets underway, because you'll have to back up your words in the chamber if you're a Fianna Fáil backbencher, for an example. And what do you think about these proposals? Higher cigarette prices are the only way to shift our stubborn smoking rate. This is in The Sun. The Irish Heart Foundation is calling for excise duty on a 20-pack of cigarettes to be increased by 5% above inflation every year, and this would mean a hike of 160 in budget 2027, which would bring the price of the most popular pack to over that €20 mark. Can you imagine handing over at least 20 a day at €20.60? That being said, what was it, the percentage given about the amount of smokers that smoke black market cigarettes? Was it 60%, someone said? So that is definitely, because if you need to smoke, you have to smoke. It's very hard to quit. So it's not hard to find these cigarettes off the back of a lorry, so to speak. Maybe it needs something more nuanced than simply just forcing people to buy cigarettes illegally. I don't know. Right, a couple of guests on the programme now. Let's go first to Pat Brady, owner of the Kitchen Restaurant in Letterkenny. Good morning to you, Pat. Thanks so much for joining us.
No bother, Greg. Thank you. Morning to you too, and to the listeners.
Right. You've said it's quite a big statement. It's impossible to do business in Letterkenny. What's this about?
Well, I was a post I put up on Friday after getting a parking ticket outside the cafe on Facebook. I didn't quite expect to get the reaction I got to it, to be honest with you, Greg. I put it up as sort of at the time when I was very annoyed. We have a cafe just opposite McGinley's on the corner of Lower Main Street. And obviously we come back and forward to the cafe during the day. But once we come to the main street, and put our van there. We have to be gone out of it within the 2 hours. We can't come back at any stage again during the course of the day. Even though our business, the van clearly marked, we're there at 7:30 every morning. We open up. We try and get as much done as possible because obviously it's not in our interest for somebody to park in the street all day, every day. We want to stay as clear as possible, you know, and that to work. But for somebody who's doing business, to come back, to try and get everything out. If we get delayed, you end up with a €40 ticket, which is what happened on Friday morning. Whereas the van was there from 7:30 in the morning, the guy went down the street at 29 minutes past 9, and he obviously raced back up at 10 o'clock to get a ticket on the van before I could get out to put a parking ticket. And as a matter, I haven't had a parking ticket on the van for a number of months at this stage, so it hasn't, but it is an issue, and it's stopping people calling, coming in for a coffee, coming in, and if you get delayed more than a half an hour, we have a lot of builders every Friday morning. They've stopped coming because of the parking on the main street.
Pat, what do you think would be the solution then?
I think probably the first, in general, it's not an issue. And as I say, I haven't had a ticket for a long time, and most of the attendants operate an amount of common sense to come down the street to take a car. If they come back in an hour's time, it's still there to give them a ticket. And that's 100%, as far as I'm concerned, that's the way it should be. But unfortunately, every now and again, somebody seems to get dropped in, and that all changes. And literally, they're waiting for the half an hour to be up and come back. And that's just driving business off the main street. Why on a Friday morning would you not go to down to the Century Cinemas or down to the retail parks to get your breakfast or up to Kelly's? What, you know, what would bring you to the main street to face this sort of harassment while you sit there for half an hour?
I understand the phraseology, but it's not harassment if you're ticketed for parking illegally, Pat, is it? I mean,
I accept that, and that's 100%. But if you take from our point of view as a business, so if I come in the morning and I put a ticket on that van, and I have to come back in the afternoon, I can't legally park anywhere near my premises on the main street. I actually have to take a chance on getting a ticket. So I can't, as a business person, I can't literally come back to my own premises at any stage after paying my 2 hour parking.
Just to be clear, that because I wasn't fully aware of that, because it never. So in other words, you can't pay for parking, and then park for 2 hours, and then come back and pay for parking again.
Absolutely not. You can only park for 2 hours at any place on the main street. So you can't come back to anywhere on the main street after the 2 hours. That's you done. You're gone. You have a half an hour free, and then you've your 2 hours to pay for. And obviously you could do it in the app, but you can't. If you go on the Donegal parking app and you see it, you're not allowed to reapply for parking on the main street once you've your 2 hours done.
Yeah, and I think almost there's almost two issues going on here, if you don't mind, and I might split them up a little bit, especially with our next guest. Because one is the strict enforcement of the rules, right? And we can have different views in relation to that. The other is the fact that you're saying you can't legally park for 3 hours on Letterkenny Main Street in one day.
Correct.
Okay. If there's more, you like Jimmy Cricket, go on. If there's more.
No. That's effectively the same. If you only have 1 half hour free, so if you get your half hour free this morning and you go on, if you come back in the afternoon again, that half hour doesn't exist the next time around. But you can't, once you've paid your, and in actual fact, if you just pay for an hour in the morning, you can't come back to park again on the main. You won't get an option to park again on the main street once you've used your parking on the main street. You have to return within 2 hours, and your car has to be moved.
Okay, so just to be clear, that sounds like the app. But say I physically buy a ticket. So you're saying if I park in the morning for 2 hours, right, and I go in and I have a lovely meal in the kitchen restaurant, and then I decide to go for a massage in the evening. Are you saying if I buy a ticket, another ticket in a physical machine and put in my windscreen, theoretically I could get done for parking?
Absolutely, 100%. Because if you're on the app, you're not allowed to do that. That's the big issue, that we can't keep coming back. It's not about the ticket, it's not about paying for the parking, because you're right. I actually totally agree that, you know, you don't want somebody parking on the main street all day. You don't want staff coming in, leaving the car there. You know, that stops people going to the banks, stops people going to all the businesses. So you definitely don't want that.
The one thing I will say to you, back and forward. Not that it matters, but if I parked This is me being completely honest, Pat, because we could all, everyone has different wiggle room. Is it 5 minutes? Is it 10 minutes? Is it 15? If I parked outside the kitchen restaurant and I went in and I come out after 35 minutes and I had a parking ticket, I'd be peed off. But you know what I would say? Fair cop. I shouldn't have been there.
And I would be, if I had my car outside and it happened to me, I would be 100% exactly the same.
But I would be peed off. I would be beat off. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, look, and over the years we have been. The other thing as well, and in particular seems to be an issue lately, is that there's the tax discs. The particular wards check away at the tax disc. So you have people with brand new cars who come into town, and if that person is in operation, they won't come to the main street because they get a ticket for not having
No, that's true. And change of ownership. I said that to my young fella. He was waiting for the logbook back, and I says, don't be parking here, Letterkenny.
Exactly. So for you to say that, don't park near Letterkenny Main Street, from a business point of view, I mean, that's absolute kamikaze stuff.
Stay there. We have Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly. Two issues here. The first one, a little bit of grace, Donal. What's your views in relation to that? You know, again, because I think it's because I cover so much to do with parking bays for the disabled, and I was only going to be 5 minutes and that kind of stuff. Not every town in this county has half an hour grace, and now we maybe want to push that out a little bit or whatever. What's your view in relation to it?
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Can you hear me there? Yeah.
Loud and clear.
Yeah. Listen, Greg, I suppose, listen, there's a bit of confusion and around the parking laws, and that's something that I have raised on numerous occasions, that it needs to be made more clearly, particularly on our main street in Letterkenny. And I've asked, you know, at our last workshop where we were going through the parking bylaws, which will be going out to public consultation. I'm just not, there's no date set for it, but I would urge the public to attend the public consultation and express their views, and particularly the businesses in Letterkenny Main Street and surrounding areas. But I have asked very clearly that there is, for an example, Greg, certain colours of signs be put on our main street to clearly outline the parking laws and particular areas. But that said, and I was listening to Pat there, and I've seen his post on Facebook as well, you know, there needs to be more of a common sense approach from our traffic wardens. And, you know, Greg, businesses, you know, particularly in our main street, as Pat says, I mean, it's very easy for people to park outside of town, but for to come into our main street and our half-hour parking. And it needs to be very clear. And this is where a lot of people get caught out. People think if they park, say, outside the kitchen, they have a half-hour free. If they come out and get into the car and, say, go around the town again and park outside, say, for example, Brian McCormick Sports, they think they have another half-hour free. That is not the case. Yeah. You only have the one half hour. And, you know, that's where people's getting confused. But on the other side of that, Greg, and I mean, I have been contacted on different occasions with, and I'm not afraid to say it, a bit of arrogance as well from our wardens. And I'm not tarring them all with one brush, but where people are confused and, you know, clearly made a mistake and hold their hands up. And I think, you know, that's the time you should
be. And I never thought I would do this. But can I jump here in defence of the parking wardens? They hear every excuse under the book. Every excuse. And then when they try and enforce the rules, they get a mouthful of abuse in relation to it. You get half an hour's free parking per day in Letterkenny. You don't get that in the Twin Towns. I don't think you get that in Buncrana, do you? There was talk about it. I don't believe you do. So you get half an hour free. And then people want to push it out to 35 minutes or 36 minutes or 37. Where does it end? A parking attendant has to... what about if I want to come in and go to the kitchen restaurant, right? But another book who's finished and is just chatting, having tea and looking for free extra water, they're still sitting there taking up that parking space. Pat, I want to come in. I want to come in and eat in your restaurant, but the builders are doing top-up after top-up and not paying for the parking. Come on.
Yeah, but listen, Greg, I totally understand where you're coming from and agree with you as well in cases. Now, there is genuine cases there when people has genuinely made a mistake or maybe at an appointment and got maybe stuck and 5 minutes late, you know what I mean? And I'm not pointing the finger here at the Abbey Gardens either because, I mean, they're trying to do their job, they're trying to do their level best, but what I have stated clearly is I think there should be a wee bit more of a common sense approach here. You take for the likes of Pat there, there's different businesses in the main state have been in touch with me as well where they're getting parking tickets. Now, these businesses have their own vehicle with their own brand stickered on them. And I mean, for me, for to be a couple of minutes over, it's very simple that a conversation could be had where traffic warden goes in and knocks on the door to the business and says, listen, you're running over time. Are you going to be much longer here? Or because I'm going to be left with no option but to put a ticket in your van. Then they give the business an opportunity to come out and move the vehicle or have a conversation.
What if it then? But, what is it if it's then if someone's using the same argument in a disabled parking bay?
Listen, that Greg, for that needs to be enforced big time.
You see, people we're all equal, though. But we're all equal.
We're all 100%. And that's, Greg, that's where it comes back now to what's very important is the traffic bylaws, the public consultation. And it's very important for the businesses and for the people of Letterkenny to come in and express their views.
Okay, I want to come back to you on that. We don't have a date for that. I want to come back, but I want to say to Pat, I wanted to pull in outside the kitchen restaurant, and I'm giving you as many free plugs here as I can. I wanted to pull in to the kitchen restaurant, but there was a group of builders in there getting their third pot topped up with water, and I couldn't come in with my family and leave 70 quid behind me. Do you get me?
I absolutely appreciate what you're saying. Now, just to go back on the builders, to be fair to the builders and why I actually... They on a Friday morning have a half an hour usually of a window.
I know, I love the builders.
They're the bad guys to be picking out. But no, look, I absolutely, and to be fair to the traffic wards, I see them on the street day in, day out. To do their job, and you're right. People argue the toss with them. I've argued the toss with them myself in different parking space, and I do have somebody to have a job to do, and they're 100% right. I don't blame the traffic warden for what the situation that we're in, that we can't stop outside the business to unload or load at any stage after paying parking on the main street. But as you say, it's a catch 22. I don't want people parking all day on the main street either. You know, literally leaving the car there and not being able to pay. So there is, as Donald said, there's obviously a discussion to be had in the council as to how you address that. I suppose the other issue
I'm
is...
I'm going to put it to you, Pat, then, just in relation to this half hour. Here's your choices.
Yeah.
Half hour strictly, everyone knows the crack, or, you know, the wild west of parking in Letterkenny. There's your choices, because we're asking parking wardens to have individual discretion for hundreds of cars up and down the main street. Now, let's not forget, the only way they know a car's there for half an hour is they have to tag the number plate once, and then half an hour later they have to tag it again. So you know they're not tagging that number plate as soon as that car's plugged in, pulled in. They're going to be scanning that probably 5, 10, 15 minutes later.
Yeah,
do you understand?
That.
We have to be fair when we put up our posts. And we have to be fair. At what point? The half an hour is not starting as soon as someone pulls into that space, because that number plate has to be scanned, and then a half an hour has to pass, right?
Yeah. Understood. Yeah. No. Look. That's not the argument on the half hour. And if I got the ticket, if I was parked on the bottom of the street and a ticket in the van got the half hour like yourself, I'd be annoyed with myself. I'd be annoyed to get the ticket. But the fact that the van was right outside the cafe, then you were working there.
You.
And
yeah,
as Donald pointed out, that you could say, there's a van. That's the business just there. How big a job is it to walk in and say, like, we do unload in the taxi rank. The lads move out of our way to let us unload through the door there, and we move on as quick as we can. We do it because that's the only way we can operate.
I think you've hit the nail on the head here. Discretion could be, it's an ecosystem. Work with the local businesses, obviously, and that limits it to a very few number of vehicles and not sort of the free for all.
I wouldn't expect the traffic warden to be picking out every car dealing with every person. And totally agree with that.
Let's bring Donald back in on this 2 hours per day parking. Donald, that seems a bit counterintuitive, isn't it? Because I'd be in and out of towns and villages But Pat says, you know, if I parked 2 hours in the morning and then legitimately bought a ticket for the afternoon, that I could get effectively done for illegal parking. Is that your understanding of the case? And that's crazy.
Greg, believe it or not, that is news to me as well. And I mean, this is where we need to be very clear on the parking laws. And the people, like, when you hear businesses there that merge that, the likes of Pat, I mean, the 90%, maybe 95% of the general public aren't aware of that. You know, and these are the things that I have expressed numerous times in workshops to try to make very clear. Because, Greg, there's one thing that I feel should be with the people coming in and out of Letterkenny, the traffic wardens and the businesses, and that's, there should be a relationship. Or I feel our wardens, they could play be more role models, if you like, to come out, have a conversation with people, welcome to the town, have a conversation at the doors with businesses, and a wee bit more of a common sense approach. Now, that works both ways. You also have people that are coming in and they're chancing their hand, you know, and jumping out of their car and running in. And I mean, there's genuine cases where people maybe could stop in conversation.
Well, let me ask you, Donald, honestly, which do you think happens more? Do you think more motorists come in and chance their arm? Or do you think more motorists come in and get caught out because they made a mistake? I would suggest it's probably 80% chance in the arm, 20% making the mistake. And I think, to be honest with you, that these guys and girls have a tough old job. And I think there is an argument to work with Pat as a business owner and look at it logically, saying he's unloading. But when we start asking them to sort of then start allowing on top of half an hour free parking, it's unfair. And when we put that out there into the ecosystem of conversation, it could lead them just to getting even more abuse. Honestly, that's my honest view.
Yeah, and listen, that's where I'll go back to again, Greg. There needs to be more of a common sense approach. You know, have the conversation. You're correct. There is people that, there's people come in and chance their arm, surely. And listen, I'm no angel myself. If I was in a rush myself, I would park and jump out and run in and try to get back again.
Get the app. It's very handy.
We're all human, Greg. But listen, at the end of the day, all that you would like to see, particularly in Letterkenny, is a welcome approach from everyone. You know, have more of a relationship, not a divide. That's something you don't want to see going on. Mm. But common sense approach, go into businesses. Like, there's numerous businesses there that are getting ticketed. I mean, a knock on the door, Martin, how are you? Or Mary, how are you? Are you going to be much longer to load the van? You know, simple things like that.
Is there not loading times early in the day and evening, Pat?
Well, there's loading bed, but the nearest loading bed to us is up the top of the market, above the market square. So
I guess
it's not even.
It's not on the cards.
It used to be a loading bay across where I was there. That used to be a loading bay, but at some stage the council changed that back to an ordinary parking space, like 5 or 6 years ago.
All right.
So it was up to 10 o'clock that you could load in it. So
Donald, will you double check this returning to park thing for us as well, too? Because I know it's in the private car parks, but just double, if you don't mind. I don't want to give you a job. Listen, thanks so much for joining us, Donald. That's Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly. Pat Brady, me and you aren't we're not 100 miles apart in our views either.
Appreciate that.
And how is business? Because the schools and everything's starting up next week, Pat. Are you concerned that people might be discouraged? Where are you at in that whole conversation, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, look, being honest, we're happy. We have a fairly regular custom on the main street.
And
you know, it's a good business. We're here 20 years, and it's just that we obviously like it, and that's why we want to continue. And we don't want to see things happening that are going to drive people away from us and from the main street. We like it as the same. My wife is here all the time. She bakes away. I come and go to the place, but it's a good. And being honest with you, it's a good place to operate. So look, we're not, certainly not complaining about
I
that.
I would love you to put the wife on to see what she thinks of this parking conversation.
It's the last thing in the world. She's standing behind encouraging me to go on and say nothing, as you would expect. So, and she definitely won't take the phone. Listen, appreciate
it. I'm on it, Mess. It'll do you no harm. It's a good conversation to have. Look after yourself. Pat Brady there, owner of the Kitchen Restaurant Letterkenny. Before the break, I want to bring in James. James, sorry for holding you there. You're a delivery driver, so you would have some sort of insight, or a good insight, sorry, into this situation. What's it like for you doing your job?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear. Go ahead, James.
I just want to take it on from what Pat said there, and Pat said there's loading bay up at the Market Square. That loading bay now has more or less been done away with the refurbishing of the Market Square.
Mm-hmm.
But as a delivery person, I deliver into a lot of towns. And Letterkenny is the only town that the loading bay stops at 10:30 or 12 o'clock.
Right.
You can't deliver after that. And some of the premises we deliver to don't open to that time.
Pubs, I presume, and that like type the loading of stuff. Bay, yeah,
and the loading bays aren't sufficient enough amount of loading bays in the town. Now, I have to say the traffic wardens, up to 10:30, they keep the loading bays free for the hours.
Yeah.
But once 10:30 comes, it's a free fall then. No way you get parked and one thing or another. So there isn't enough loading bays. As Pat said, that one across from his cafe was a loading bay. For some strange reason, all of a sudden, it was done away with as a loading bay.
What do you do in that situation? Well, like, because it's a narrow street, right? You've nowhere to park. Some of these, if it's kegs or something, there's a ton of weight in it. What do you do? How do you fulfil the delivery, James?
You might have to circle the town maybe two or three times and put your partner out to maybe try and keep a space for you when you come around. Yeah. I deliver into a lot of towns, like Sligo and different towns, and there isn't a problem with loading bays. There's sufficient loading bays, and they're loading bays all day. So it's not an issue. It just seems to be whatever Larry Kenny means in the law. Now, the traffic wardens is 100%. Like, we never would have no bother with the traffic wardens in Larry Kenny. They're all very nice there. It's just that there isn't enough loading bays. I haven't thought it out. Some of the loading bays is actually small loading bays. They'll cover a van.
That's right.
They won't cover a large
car. I was going to say that to you, yeah. I was going to say some of those loading bays are pretty tight if you've got a big yoke, okay? So Letterkenny would be an outlier. So James, Letterkenny would be an outlier then. So this is almost unique to Letterkenny, if not completely unique to it then.
Well, towns that I've been in and all, it seems to be that Letterkenny, the loading bays, I think it's 10:30, some of them loading bays stops in the town. If not, it's 12 o'clock, but if I'm really sure it's 10:30. And like, we deliver to publicans and a pub doesn't open to 10 o'clock. It's not legally allowed to open to 10 o'clock. Yeah. Someone won't come earlier, and that's just the way they are.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, as Pat said, there's one up at the Market Square, but that's done away with now because that's where they're storing stuff for the doing up the Market Square and stuff.
So
and if I was to park in a taxi rank or something like that, which some of the taxi ranks is empty during that day, if they could do them, a thing of example, you can use it, but if a traffic warden comes along and you're in a body health, you're done.
Interesting.
In a taxi rank.
Listen, James, thanks for that insight. That's, I never thought about that, but you'd be going, oh no, we're going to Letterkenny now. Will we get parked or not?
Well, that's sometimes you have to drive around the town maybe two or three times to get parked in.
Wow.
And like, it's not just one delivery. In the morning, there could be numerous of lorry men looking to get into a space, so it's a free for all.
All right. Thanks, James. Look after yourself. I'm joined on the programme by Donegal fiddler Martin McGinley. Martin, thank you so much for joining us today. Unfortunately, it's to mourn the very tragic and sad passing of Ethna Vallely. Tell us a little bit about... I'll tell our listeners, in fact, Ethna is from Donegal, but she died following a road traffic collision on the Portadown Road in Armagh Friday morning. And this is a lady that is synonymous with music in this county.
Yeah. Well, Ethna, it was a big shock to hear the news that she'd been knocked down on Friday morning. I think around 8:30, was pronounced dead at the scene. She's been a major figure, herself and her husband, Brian, major figure in traditional Irish music. They basically were the driving force behind the Armagh Pipers Club. She's been living in Armagh with Brian, just in the centre of Armagh there since around 1969. So she's been gone a long time, but they've made a massive impact because they organise the Armagh Pipers Club, the teaching you know, 200 to 250 young people and adults every year, 30 tutors. So you can imagine the number of people that have gone through their hands since 1969. You're talking literally thousands of people. And if you look at the tributes on Facebook, I mean, they're astounding. The impact they've made, people saying, you know, that they set me on my journey. The music is so important to me. And some of these people are professional musicians, are really well known. Three of their own children then are professional musicians. Niall down in Cork, who's just recently been announced as Composer of the Year, the T.G. Cahir Awards for Traditional Music. They're the sort of premium awards. He's Composer of the Year for 2026. That ceremony's next month. Killian plays with Lunas. He's based in the States. He's recorded for various people. And just saw that he's on a recording by Bruce Springsteen. Wow. He plays the Indian pipes, like his father, Brian. And then Keevan, who I think I taught in the Donegal, he used to come up to the Donegal Fiddles Week in Glencolumbkill. He's down in Cork as well, and he's a noted fiddler and piano player. So not alone have they, did Ethna make an impact as a teacher. She was a teacher in her full-time job and then also teaching in the evenings for the MRI Papers Club, organising the whole thing with Brian. Thousands of people. They won so many awards over the years, and they produced, you know, publications. They organized concerts. They organized seminars, books. They made. They just made. They're one of the best known families in traditional music.
It's astonishing, isn't it? And Ethna's influence, not just on the generation before now or before then and future generation, it's unmeasurable, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the,
if you think about it, the ripples from her and her family, you could never really. I mean, you've paid a wonderful tribute. Don't get me wrong, but you could never track all the influences and the differences.
No, because if you look online, there's so many people have put up Facebook posts about Ethna. There are my Papers Club being, of course, one of them, and there are, you know, 350 odd comments there. Really heartfelt comments about Ethna and the difference she made in people's lives. So I suppose for us in Donegal, you know, we can think of her as someone who was born, who grew up in Lifford, to a well-known family, because Harry Carey, her father, was the secretary of the Donegal Committee of Agriculture, which was a big thing at the time. For 45 years, he was secretary of the County Board of the GAA, played the fiddle. He was president of the Ulster Council for 3 years in the 60s. He was a big fan. Irish was important to him. So I think Ethna actually grew up in Lifford speaking Irish, which was very unusual. She went to a secondary school, an all-Irish secondary school in Fulcara, that big house outside Fulcara. And I think she must have been one of the last group of students there, because it closed around 1959. She was born in 45. Then she went down to Monaghan. So she grew up, I mean, she went to Murlough School, which is just outside Lifford there, and she was taught her first music by Paul Brady's father, Sean Brady, in that school. So there's probably still people in Lifford that remember, and they certainly remember the family. Like Harry, like, was a founder of the local GAA club.
Yeah.
He was involved in the Red Cross. He was involved in Irish. He was involved in the credit union, right across the board. Very well known, and they used to have sessions there. She was very, I spoke to her because I did work on the East Donegal Fiddlers, and she was able to talk about sessions in their house in Lifford.
Brilliant.
Eddie McIntyre, the county librarian.
And were you archiving that, were you?
Yeah, it's up on the Donegal Fiddle website.
Fantastic. That's so important.
It is, because not too many people can remember the likes of Eddie McIntyre, one of the McIntyre. Yeah. We all know the McIntyres here in Letterkenny, you know, would be the same connection. He was a librarian. He played in their house in sessions. And Jimmy Houston, originally from Castlefin, lived in Drumkeen. Frank Kelly, a very noted Donegal fiddle player, she remembered him. He died recently. So she was able to give us information that we hadn't known
Fantastic
about.
Fantastic for you to archive that.
And a lovely woman as well.
And Martin, obviously teaching is teaching, and you know, you'll see musicians from Rihanna to whoever it might be, and the person that made a difference in their life is often the music teacher, okay? So, I mean, obviously someone like Ethna, and this would go for you as well, in imparting the passion, you know, I mean, you're showing people finger positioning and you're showing people rhythm and whatever it might be, but what else is happening there that you are sort of instilling a passion beyond the physical playing of an instrument?
I think that's one thing that comes across, and it came across not just from talking to Ethna and Brian, her husband Brian, very well-known painter as well. I got a chance to know them a bit. They came up to Killybegs when I was involved with the CLN. They spent a couple of weekends there, so we got a chance to hang out, as they say. And the thing that people are saying about Ethna and Brian, they're just, the commitment was total, and that rubbed off on the people that they dealt with. They could see these people were living their interest in traditional music and had a genuine interest in young people and adults. And there's a couple of documentaries. You can see at least one of them online. One was made there as Kulon Clan, you know, in 2022. It's on TG Carr. Mm. It's been on, I think it's been repeated there. The Vallely family. And he's saying, which is very encouraging for people, he's saying that he thinks that anybody can learn to play an instrument. And when you've got that approach, nobody's really worried about whether they've got talent or anything. They just, he's saying, listen, if you want to do it, just do it. And that's important.
Am I too old to learn the guitar?
Not at all, no. The secret is practice. Mm. If you want to do something.
Am I too old to practice?
Well, you see, that's what I find with adults. I mean, they're giving out to their kids all the time, but you're not practicing. And then if they take classes themselves, they're saying, well, it was, you know, I've got work and I have to look after the kids.
You've got
everything.
Excuses.
Yes.
Martin, listen, thanks for calling in and paying tribute to a wonderful lady with a huge influence. And it's an awful tragic way to die, because we don't know for how long she would have lived, of course. But if there's any comfort, it's the legacy, it's the impact, it's the, you know, we would all love to feel that we could have our memories live on in the way hers will. So hopefully, and I'm sure her family will draw some comfort from that, even given the tragic circumstances of her death.
Well, I'm just heading up there now to the wake, and I know I'll be hearing from people at the wake just about the enormous contribution and the difference she made in people's lives.
Okay, well, pass on our condolences as well. Thank you so much, and safe onward journey. That is a legend himself, of course, Martin McGinley, a Donegal fiddler, paying tribute to Ethna Vallely, 81 years of age, originally from Donegal. Her family, with very strong ties, but very sadly died following that road traffic collision on the Portadown Road in Armagh on Friday morning last. Lots of you messaging in the programme this morning. Very much appreciated, let me tell you. The parking issue, as you can imagine, has got people wanting to have their say. Businesses on Main Street pay high rates to the council, so it's too bad they couldn't have a parking space outside their businesses. Another, the square should be turned into a car park now. Would that be useful, I wonder? What do you think? It's obviously, there's other big plans for that square. Hi, just comment about the parking app that Greg's talking about. It takes €1 off me every time you top up. Ooh, right. I didn't notice that. Is that like an admin fee? Too many hills to walk up to the main street. Back years ago, the buses took people up to the market square to shop and eat from other towns and Letterkenny's hinterland. The banks are all in the main street too. A lot of people can't get parking on Main Street Park in the courtyard, they say. Can you clarify if the free half hour on the main street still exists or not? There was always a free half hour. Now people are staying there. It's not. If not, when did this change? No, you'd still have the half hour. The conversation is that people want more latitude. So if you're there for 33 minutes or 35 minutes or 37 minutes, that you don't get a ticket. How that works, I really don't know. As a victim, as someone who's received parking tickets, I'm not happy about it. It's never not been my fault. Can you ask the councillor, is it discrimination that here in Bella Buffet we've no free parking? There's mixed views on that, and it's come up for public consultation and conversation, and I've spoken to businesses that are in favour of it and others that aren't. Is it discrimination? It's democracy. You've got local representatives there. If you want free parking half an hour, I would get on that with them. Just listening to your programme about parking, I have to say the parking is ridiculous. I recently was down the bottom of the main street and I literally pulled in. I was taking a phone call. I was only pulled in 2 minutes. When the parking man walked up, took a picture of my number plate, I got out and said, I'm just taking a phone call here. I'll only be 5 minutes. He said, you have half an hour. I was like, I won't be here half an hour. He then stood at the corner, literally watching me. Another case, I was walking back to my car, had a ticket on, etc. And he'd done me for no tax disc displayed. I said, I have a tax disc. Isn't out yet. I showed it to him on my phone. I taxed it and he said it's too late in the system. I walked on. Absolutely ridiculous. Now, there's two things going on there. A, they have to log your number plate to keep track of parking. That's the reality, whether we like it or not. Two, it is an issue. You know, the system should be able to... Like, what is the rules? You are allowed grace with the non-display of a tax disc, aren't you? If you tax your car and you're waiting for it to be posted, you know, you're not driving illegally, or are you? That needs to be clarified, I think. It really does, because there's a lot of people changing cars, and it does take a while. And you do pay tax from when you took ownership of it. So a caller says, I agree with the ticketing. Many business owners and staff use these spaces. He just said 2 hours in the morning and two in the evening. How many customers are lost because of that? More here. A disabled person with a blue badge got a ticket in Letterkenny because their road tax disc was out of date, even though disabled people do not pay road tax on their cars. You see, it's not the person. There might be someone else driving that car, you see. I feel like I'm going to get in trouble here. I'm not being very popular, but it might not just be the disabled person driving that car either, might it? Another caller says, I think the 30-minute grace should be given from the initial time on the parking ticket. Buncrana has 30 minutes grace. Yes, indeed. It's hard to keep track because then Ballyshannon scrapped. You have to understand from my perspective, you know, it's not just all Letterkenny with me. I have to try. I know Ballyshannon scrapped their parking charges. Ballybofane, Stranorlo, there's mixed views. Buncrana, they have their grace, but it's hard on the spur of the moment to keep track of everything. My apologies. Hi, Greg. It's the same problem in Ballybofey, especially on Navaney Street. There's no grace for elderly people who have to park up in the car, which is a steep hill and a walk to run in for their daily essentials. If I had to guess, I'd say it's driving business to the larger supermarkets instead. And I have a lot of parking. I have a lot of parking messages, and I'm going to get to as many of them as I can. There's other stuff as well. Morning, Greg. National Community Games finals were held in Carlow at the weekend. Diva Diver from Remelton got silver in the under-12s girls long jump. Milford under-12 boys soccer team got silver. Well done to all our competitors that travelled to Carlow and represented Donegal. Well done to you all. Thanks to all the parents and management. Fair play. That comes in from the Donegal PRO, Tony McCarry. Great bit of success down there. The DL debate is on tonight from 7 p.m, just after the news at 7, but tune in from 7. I like you to listen to the news. There's a lot coming up, of course. Brendan Devaney's its presenter. Hi, Brendan.
Yes, Greg. How's things, boy?
I am good. And, you know, we've three rounds of games done in the senior championship. Glenn Swilly, top of the pile. Interesting, there are a number of mid-table undefeated teams as well, but it is starting to take a little bit of shape, and you'll be reflecting on that this evening, I'm sure.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's been some good starts. As you said, Glenn Swilly, don't know, sides really, you know, putting up the hand. They say they want to make an assault on this Dr. Maguire. So, yeah, listen, you've obviously got a few draws in there as well. So, Unions need Connell, sides the Gacky Door. Picked up draws, so yeah, don't know, and Glenn Swilly certainly looking good. Kilcara, of course, and Four Masters could join that group. They have a rearranged game to play yet. But yeah, a lot of interesting results in there, and as you mentioned, Glenn Swilly, very, very late two-pointer. McGill of Regia banging one over with the last kick of the game to equalise against Sean McCulls, who was very impressed with this season as well. You know, they're going well too. So yeah, a lot of teams in there, Greg, looking like they can, you know, at least, you know, compete at the senior club level, and some interesting results.
Yeah, down the bottom of the table, a few teams yet to register any scores at all. We talked about the table starting to take shape. It's not too late though, is it? Or do you see any massive moves from down there?
Yeah, already. Listen, some of the teams got a feel of avoiding a relegation, Greg. Certainly, you know, your Neve Columbus and you know, Ardrazi, even Tiernan have had a tough championship so far, particularly after the very good one they had last season, Downings as well. So, listen, yeah, a lot of teams in there, Greg, I've found it a bit tough. You know, they've still played well in patches and games and that, but big, big game for Tiernan this week at home to Dunlow this. They can turn the season around. That's a massive game, but of course don't know very much in form.
Indeed, and there's plenty of action in the lower leagues as well. Niamh Mura coach and Radio na Gaeltacht at the commentator, Oni McGarvey, is on the programme to go through all of the ramifications in more detail. And another feature on the man in the middle, the woman in the middle, but mostly men, of course. I like this focus you do on the refs because it's an important part of the game, and I don't see another sort of sports show podcast that does return to this topic with a bit of frequency.
Yeah, do you know what, Greg? It's interesting that we don't like engage with our refs more in terms of their perspective and how they see the game, and we don't hear enough from them, I don't think, because they have such a unique job in there, and they're so pivotal to it. And just for the new rules and how they're now completely bedded in, and what the ref's reaction did. And I think when you highlight how a ref sees it, Greg, I think it's very important, because if anybody out there, as I said to you before, if you take a club game, if you're in coaching your club and you do a wee in-house game, it's an absolute nightmare. And that's your own players. People shouting and roaring and people getting on to you. And people have all different interpretations. Mm. So it's always interesting to see just how a ref evaluates situations, and particularly now with this wave of new rules. They're well set in now, but just I like to sometimes kind of humanise their perspective on it. I think it's important, Rick, because, you know, they play such a huge role in America. And Enda, we are blessed like to have two very good refs, so we'll have them on too. We'll get a word from the Masters as well, Greg. I've just mentioned
into the finals.
Yeah. So listen, as the day goes on, we'll get somebody on the show.
Did you ever play in the Masters?
No, I didn't play. I had given up.
Of course. Yeah. So that would have been counterintuitive, wasn't it? Your activity was cut a bit short there with the old hippie shakes.
I think a lot of the Masters, Greg, are people that are, we all have different builds, not so a lot of them have just maybe very good genetics. So,
are you sure it's not because they saved themselves as
much breakdancing from some of them boys, maybe?
Brilliant, okay. But it is hugely competitive, and it's top quality football, like.
Listen, they were all out in Philadelphia with that thing, remember we were out?
Yeah.
Especially, I kind of half knew quite a few of them, but it was great to get to know them better out there. You know what? I think there's such a more relaxed attitude towards the Masters now, not to get anything away from the competitive edge when they're playing, obviously, but they do seem to really enjoy the whole process and they get together, and they're a great bunch of lads too, and back in the All-Ireland final. So it takes a huge effort. So well done to Eddie Crawford, of course, and the whole back team there as well for pulling that together.
All right. Ony McGarvey, Radio Na Gaeltacht, the commentator, Niamh Mura, coach, and refs Mark Dorrian and Enda McFeely. A thankless task the refs have, let's be honest. So interesting to get their perspective on a much more complicated job than it might have been in the past with all the new rules. That's live from 7 o'clock this evening with Brendan Devaney. Brendan, thanks so much. Bye-bye. And, of course, you can listen to it as a podcast very shortly thereafter. It'll be up live for you not far after 8, actually. The boys turn it around really, really quickly. Back to parking. It's too bad a businessman can't park at his premises with his name on the van. Something terribly wrong here, unless they want all businesses to close down. Can you ask the council why traffic wardens are checking window screens of parked cars to see if the car is insured or taxed? I'm not sure they have any influence on insurance. I'll have to double check that. But for a long time, traffic wardens, well, I've been aware that traffic wardens are charged with the display of a valid tax disc. I wonder if you put the receipt from your road tax. You know how often you order online? I wonder if you put the receipt in the little box, would you get away with that? Greg, the traffic wardens always seem to stay near the same place. I've seen two different traffic wardens in the space of 2 hours at the car park at the back of the post office. Last one before the break. One place I never have seen a traffic warden is at Max Mace on the High Road. There's a footpath across the road from Max Mace at the corner where the Social Protection Office is. And on that road beside the footpath, there's a double yellow line blocking the footpath. Every single day, there are cars parked up on the footpath, blocking the footpath, yet I've never seen a traffic warden there. From morning to evening, that footpath is blocked with cars sitting parked on the footpath. Are the traffic wardens in Letterkenny not allowed to walk up as far as the high road? Maybe they need scooters. I don't know what the crack is there. Now, we're joined on the programme by Les Cahirlock of the Innishowen Municipal District Councillor, Martin McDermott. Hiya, Martin. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. All's good.
Good to see you again. How's your summer been?
All good, yeah. Thank God. It's been great.
Right, so we're still working through the defective block scheme in terms of, I suppose, it's updating, but also people actually engaging with it. And people don't know when the right time to pull the pin is it whether or not to go now, to wait for this, wait for that. And the reason we wanted to invite you on is because you're getting that too, because, you know, you've been speaking about this from the get-go. It's very difficult to give people advice on a life-changing part of their life, right? But so what is the dilemma? I suppose I'll let you frame the dilemma people are in at the moment, Martin.
Well, Greg, as you know, there was a change a couple of months ago to the IS-465. So that's something that's been going on for the last year to try to update, as we knew, and we've had this conversation many a time, that the standard was, you know, behind the scheme, that the standard wasn't... The standard was put together back in, started in 2017 and was put out there in 2019. So a lot has changed during that period of time. A lot of new information has come on board since that. So that standard needed to be reviewed. Was reviewed and a new standard, the National Standards Authority had issued a new standard. That new standard then had implications, I suppose, for the scheme as it stands. The scheme will have to be reviewed by the minister in relation to the new standard. But I suppose the big question was what was going to happen in the meantime between that standard being reviewed, the new standard coming out, which it has, and the time it's going to take the minister to and the department to look at that new standard and to bring the scheme that's there, the defective block scheme, the enhanced scheme, to bring that in line with the new standard. That will take some time, probably going to take 6 or 7 months at best to get that done. And I suppose there was a situation then, what happens to people that are waiting on their remediation options in the meantime? What happens to people that are, you know, looking for technical reviews? What do these applicants do in that meantime? I suppose there's been a number of conversations with the department on that to make sure that, you know, people weren't stopped from remediating their homes while this review is taking place. And you know, Greg, as well as me, sometimes reviews can say it'll take 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. It could end up taking 8, 10, 12 months. Mm-hmm. That's the reality. We have to be honest about that. That's what happens. So we don't want and didn't want people to be in a situation where they couldn't move forward if they wanted to move forward. So the minister then announced and the housing agency announced that people could move forward and people will be contacted. A number of people have been contacted to ask them, do they want to move forward now with the remediation options that they're being given? Or do they want to wait until there's a new standard and the revised scheme? The minister has made a decision on the new scheme and how that's.
But what does that mean? I mean, obviously, people have that choice without being offered it. Is there? Would if they begin now, could they benefit from any enhancements that might be introduced during the course of their build?
No, that's probably unlikely, Greg. What's been offered now is people to move on with it, the scheme as it stands, or wait till the review is done, which probably at that stage will include foundations. At the minute, the scheme doesn't include foundations, so you can't get paid for putting in new foundations with the scheme that's there at the minute. After the review is done and after the legislation is changed, that probably will be something that will be allowed at that point.
Now, do you anticipate that if foundations are included, you will be able to use the grants that is there on the foundations as well? Or do you anticipate that the cap of the grant would have to increase to accommodate the foundations? Might be a stupid question, but I just don't know the answer.
No, I think that after the review's done, the scheme will have to allow, particularly if we're going to test foundations, there has to be, the scheme has to be able to, if something is wrong and a foundation is found to be, deteriorating, that will have to be, the scheme will have to allow that person to claim that foundation as part of their scheme. So that, I think, will have to come in.
Do you think the money would increase, though, in line with that?
But the money, again, is down to the minister, but the cap would have to increase to include that, whether it's 5,000, 6,000, whatever that may be. Again, that will be another discussion that will have to be held with the department, with the Chartered Surveyors of Ireland, who put those costs together. And I suppose we're coming to a stage again where you're probably going to be looking at a review of those costs as well. So there's a number of things that's going to have to happen over the next number of months.
It's the truth being, and ultimately this comes down to individuals, you have to balance everything up. But unless you have money to burn, you have to wait, surely. Because you will be getting more money and you'd be ensuring that your new house is not built on defective foundations. I mean, that's the only show in town, really, regrettably.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's why we need to make sure we have those options, that people have the option to wait. And then someone that doesn't want to wait, someone that is happy enough to move forward, go ahead and get their house remediated, that they also have that option to go ahead. So it was making sure that everyone has an option here. And I think that's what, to be fair, that's what has come out of this now. People do have the option, and you can move forward if you so wish, and if you're in a position to do that. And if you're not, you can wait then until the review is done.
What do we do into the future to ensure we're not doing this every single year? Because, you know, the scheme was sold as not perfect, but it will be enhanced, it will be adapted, it will be improved, and we'll follow the science. But, you know, what's next after, say, for instance, we do get foundations included? What's the next thing that do I wait for? If you get, especially when the review date's a slippy date and we don't know precisely, you know, when things might happen, we're always going to feel like we have this sense of jeopardy whether we move forward or not. Is there a way that can be, have you thought, that can be addressed?
Well, there's no easy way for that, but I do think, Greg, to be fair, I suppose the foundations was one of the main topics that we would have had over the last number of years.
It's a big part of this, isn't it?
If it's included, why it's not included, should it be included? I suppose, you know, that has now been taken into consideration, and that was probably one of the big ones. And I mean, if you look at the new standard now, you know, it's pretty clear that a lot of the houses will be demolished under that new standard. That there'll not be, you know, remediation options the way remediation options were being given out in the old IS465. So there's quite a significant change here coming in relation to the scheme. And I do think that, you know, bringing the foundations and testing them and making sure that they're fine and that they're okay takes a big element of that away. That we've been discussing over the last, particularly the last 3 or 4 years.
The BCMS update, what's that about?
So up to now, when you're doing your final payment, you had to include in your portal ancillary certification, so building control certification for all the elements of your rebuild. That only now has to be done between you and your building professional. That doesn't have to be uploaded onto the portal. The department have come back to say that that's not part of the scheme. I would stress that that is still a very important part for somebody building a house, to make sure that between them and their building professional, that, you know, the house is built to a standard, that they're at, that their ancillary certification for, you know, mechanical, electrical, for insulation, for, you know, windows, doors, all that stuff, that, you know, when you're building this house, when you're redoing it, to make sure that that is all in place, that everything is done to the standard that is meant to be done.
Right. So just to recap then, where we're at now, obviously people might feel they're in limbo. Do they wait the potential 6 months, but in the knowledge it could be longer, that the scheme will include foundations and might indeed have greater caps, who's to say? The situation is now that people have a no-fault decision to make. In other words, they can progress now if it works for them, but they can also wait for that review without penalty. That's really the
exactly,
significant development.
Exactly. Yeah.
Lastly,
yeah.
And this is not to try and put you in a corner. And no, it's not like that. And it might sound us, but Paul Canning was on Councillor Paul Canning, a party colleague of yours, right? And opinions, you can have a different opinion to him. It doesn't matter. He was of the view that the scheme, that you can rebuild your property, generally speaking, with the money that's available, but the people are finding themselves with overruns because of upgrades to the property, maybe increased insulation, different windows, different doors, underfloor heat, whatever it might be. Paul Canning was of the view, it's a view, it's not controversial, he was of view that if you just rebuilt your house as was without the bells and whistles, you can get it in under the cap, and he's an architect. I'm just wondering, is that how you would see it? Do you think that's... And I genuinely am not trying to pitch you against that councillor, don't get me wrong, but I do respect your experience with this scheme. Do you think a lot of the overrun is, you know, upgrades, extras?
Yeah, well, I think that someone that's going to rebuild their house today, that built a house 25 years ago, would certainly want to build it to a standard.
Modern spec.
That that is a better spec. I mean, absolutely. I think it wouldn't make any sense to build a house, you know, to a standard that I built my house to, for instance, 25 years ago. I think you do have to bring it to the day standard. I think that, you know, the costs, and I speak to people every day of the week, I think costs are getting out of control, Greg. I think, you know, and there is too much of a variance between costs that some people are getting and costs that other people are getting. I think, you know, like I've had situations where people have, for instance, a 2,100 square foot house, we're getting costs for the same house, £100,000 dearer than what it is. You know, there's something radically wrong there if the exact same house is, if one contractor is £100,000 dearer than another contractor, you know, there's something really wrong there. There are people that are able to, you know, build their house, do the work for in and around what the scheme has been done for, and that's people that sometimes people are able to do work themselves, sometimes people have family that are able to do work for them. There's a number of different anomalies out there that make the scheme work, and then there's other people that just don't have that ability and are running over quite substantially when it comes to the rebuild. And you know, the SEEI grant is also there to help with the upgrading, for instance, upgrading energy, upgrading insulation, upgrading heating system and all that. So look, there's that many anomalies out there, Greg. I think it's very, very difficult to pinpoint one versus the other. Yes. But there are people able to do it and there are people that's not able to do it. And I think, you know, that's for something that we have to work on, you know, through our own committee and defective concrete.
It's not one size fits all. I get where you're coming from.
And I think with the department as well, we have to try and get some way that we have, you know, a level playing field that everyone is getting their house done as close to the scheme as communally possible.
We get a lot of communications here. Finally, Martin, I'll let you go then. They're hard to check up because but every now and again, we'll get notification of a house that's being sold by an estate agent or in the county, that someone claims to know that it's got defective concrete blocks, but it's not in the listing per se. But as I say, I can't really track that because it gets little comments from different places and all that type of stuff. Is there any work looking at that, or is it a known issue, or is it just someone who thinks that they think they know something and presume that to be the case? Is there something going on there that needs looking at all?
You mean for buying houses, Greg, for someone?
Yeah.
I think that is something that I think, look, the AS 465 new standard didn't take that into consideration for you know, commission of selling of houses. In my opinion, there are banks making decisions on people's mortgage with absolutely no backing whatsoever. You know, this thing of a bank telling me, going and looking for a mortgage, that if my house is 5% mica, that I can't get a mortgage.
There's absolutely no scientific
background to that whatsoever. And I mean, I think it's really wrong of banks and people to be telling families and young couples that are trying to buy a house that the house is not, you shouldn't be buying it because it's 5% mica. There could be a number that might have no implication on the buying of that house whatsoever. Mm. And there's other people that have, you know, small amounts of mica or defective or deleterious materials. And I mean, look, the new standard is clearly putting the mica situation to bed, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. You know, it's not, the banks are using using something that they should never be using and shouldn't be using, because it's deleterious materials. There's a number of different
But the information should have reached them by this stage. No, it's crazy. But there is one other thing too.
There is a group, you know, the Banking Federation group, who we would have met a number of times through our defective concrete, and I'd have met them myself on a number of occasions, are doing fantastic work behind the scenes in that to try to get all those, you know, the banks, the estate agents, everybody in the one room, the department, who are maybe not playing ball the way they should play ball with them, and this, to get them all in the one room, that everyone's working off the same guidelines. And until that happens, there's always going to be ambiguity between what one person says and what another person says.
And also too, like, even if someone spots a house for sale in Letterkenny that they believe has defective concrete blocks and it's not displayed, let's just say hypothetically that happened. There's not a person, I don't think, should be buying a house, particularly of a certain vintage in this county, without doing their own testing. If you're going to be pumping 250, 3, 354 into it. So regardless of what the listing says, your own test should determine that one way or other.
And Greg, I have had people coming to me that have bought houses that were, you know, that were told absolutely this house was built way before that, and now are finding themselves in a situation where they've bought a house after the date that allows them to get on the scheme, but now is finding out that there's actually that house is defective. And that's a very serious position for somebody to be put into.
What a nightmare, because there's literally no... And it is... I mean, the information's out there. It's a tough one. All right, Councillor Martin McDermott, Gurumaiha Gut, Lasca Hirlock of the Inishowen Municipal District there. I have in studio with me now James Devaney, Supervisor with Community Employment Project, Drugs Rehabilitation with the CE Scheme. Good morning to you. Thanks for calling in.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
It's good to have you with us. Now, we're speaking ahead of International Overdose Awareness Day. And that is annual, and it's not unique to Ireland, is it? This is an international day?
Yes, it's international, and actually this year's the 25th anniversary of International Overdose Awareness Day.
And who is it for?
It's for everybody in the community. Mm. It's to raise awareness and to break down the stigma around a topic like awareness, around the topics like drugs. It could be for... It's mainly geared at peer-to-peer support, but also family members, people working in services. Anybody can come along for the time. It's on from 10:30 until 12:30. There'll be a coffee morning there where people can have conversation, people can connect with one another. People can also remember anybody that they know that has passed on from an overdose. Like the last figures that showed in Ireland, I think it was 2022, showed that Ireland had 343 drug overdose deaths.
Do you think we missed some of them too?
Some of them were, and this is what the overdose day is about. Mm. One of the main things that we would respond in Letterkenny CDP, we have two staff trained up, myself and my colleague Karen Gallen, where we provide training to peers who would be in contact, close contact or close proximity with people who are using opioids, that they're trained up on how to administer a drug called naloxone that reverses the effect of an overdose. Lives can be saved with that drug.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about that, because what we also have to talk about is the misconception of, you know, an overdose, who might have an overdose. You know, maybe people are of the view that if we're talking about overdoses, it's someone who accidentally injects too much heroin into themselves, or
yes,
does it purposely or not. I don't know what the percentage breakdown is, but there's a lot of prescribed medicine overdoses out there as well. So there's lots of variables, right?
Yeah. Well, in those figures of the 343, two-thirds of those people had opioids in their system. People hear of overdose and they automatically think somebody down a lane in Dublin somewhere with a needle in their arm injecting heroin. But the opioid overdose can be coming from pain medication that somebody's on. Like an example of opioids would be, you have your codeine, you have fentanyl, you have methadone, you have heroin, you have tramadol. You also have morphine, but you also have the synthetic opioids as well. Same way as you would have synthetic cannabis products. There is products out there that's bought over the internet or bought through the street to mimic the same effect as opioids. So if somebody has an overdose with those as well, the naloxone can reverse the effects of that.
From your experience, for survivors, people who have lost someone to an overdose, are they kind of, do they fall between the cracks in terms of, you know, it's not a natural death, it's not an accident, or it could be an accident, could be an accidental overdose, or it could be induced, or they don't know why it might have happened. What do you find, you know, amongst people? And this is why it's, I think, fantastic. There's an opportunity for people affected by this to come together and talk about it. But is there something unique in the loss or the grief for these people that are left behind?
Yeah.
And what is that? I'm struggling to form a question on it, let alone understand it.
Yeah, there's a lot of different tenets to it, Craig. You could have somebody maybe that has been in recovery for an amount of for a period of time, and through some issue they have relapsed. When they take an amount of opioid, then their tolerance has gone down, and what they were able to use before, maybe, you know, that falls into the category of overdose. Take somebody maybe that's using heroin. When a new batch of heroin comes in and it's a different strength, you know, there's an awful lot of variables in it, Greg, that it's very hard to pinpoint it down
exactly.
to one
and
issue.
I'm going to chuck into this. This is why we were having the conversation about blister packs as well, because blister packs can be quite important for people who are taking drugs like opioids. If there is additional issues, maybe some memory issue, whatever, or what, you know, it could be, you can very easily find yourself overdosing to a point where you could be incapacitated and unable to call for help. And I think that's why that whole blister pack conversation was quite important as well.
You know, like, we're looking at drugs like tramadol here. You know, we're looking at some of the most widely used drugs on the market.
Yeah.
But if somebody maybe forgets that they had them, if somebody maybe has used more, if somebody maybe, and you used it, you know, that phrase earlier on, some people, the overdose, it could be intentional as well.
Yeah.
It could be intentional. There's, it's hard. It's very.
Well,
it's
part
impossible
of the grieving process
it.
Could be trying to work that through.
Yes,
and maybe this is a good space for that. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's helping people kind of come together that they can talk about it. That they have a place where they're understood. That they're no longer alone with that. That there is people there that have been through similar. That sometimes the more questions you answer, the less answers you get.
Yes, and
but
again,
to have that peer-to-peer support is so important.
You could have someone who was diagnosed, became a little bit frailer, maybe they're taking drugs during the day, opioid drugs or whatever it might be for a condition, and then maybe at night they decide to take two sleeping tablets or whatever it might be, right? That's a one scenario. So you might walk in on them, or it could be a different scenario. Is there a way to recognise that someone might be still alive but suffering or in the process of an overdose or overdosing in that moment?
There is.
You talked about education.
Yeah, there. And that's what a lot of next week's event is about too, Greg. That there is signs, there is symptoms there. You could be walking about the sessions at the weekend. Mm. There's somebody maybe slumped against a wall. Is it because of too much alcohol? Mm. Or is this somebody that has gone into an overdose? And normally you'll see a person, they're unresponsive. Their breathing is shallow, or maybe they're not breathing at all. Their pupils, they're very, very pinpointed pupils. Their skin can be very, very pale, and it's a different sound of snoring. It's almost like a snoring from deep within the throat. Mm. And their lips can be blue, or their nails can be blue as well. And there can be a grey tone within the skin as well. It's looking out for those signs.
It's not mentioned here, but also too, sometimes, you know, the jaw can relax.
The jaw can.
See it there, but, you know, it's a peculiar thing because we unconsciously keep our mouth closed, but someone close to death or through the jaw can fall to one side as well.
Yeah.
It's another thing I'd throw in there just in case.
But it's taking that couple of seconds out just to ask yourself that question. Has that person maybe fallen asleep because of something else, or is it an overdose?
You talked about administering a drug that can counter that. In what scenario might you have that about you, or where, you know, access to that? It piqued my interest when you mentioned that.
Take, for instance, you have a family member that's actively using opioids to an extent where they could be in danger. Mm-hmm. There is a drug called naloxone that you can administer. It used to be an injection into the thigh, but now it's just a nasal spray that goes up the nose.
Wow.
And even if the person isn't in an overdose, the drug will not do them any harm.
Okay.
It's harmless in an awful lot of scenarios, but to somebody in an opioid overdose, it could be the very thing that could save their life.
Why might someone have that, or how do you acquire that?
You would acquire it if you speak with your GP, speak with addiction services, with a lot of the services there. There is things in place that you can get that, and it's kept in your fridge at home.
Once it's mentioned, there's a process that kicks in.
Ireland is actually a long way behind a lot of other countries, where you take a lot of countries, the police carry it in their car, council workers carry it in their truck.
Okay.
In America, you know, Ireland, bureaucracy, there's a headache around it, but we're breaking down those barriers.
I'd want RNLI to have that as well.
Yeah, but,
that's interesting. Yeah. That's actually almost a separate conversation. We're marking this International Overdose Awareness Day, Peer-to-Peer Coffee Morning, Monday the 31st of August, which is actually this day week, isn't it?
This day week, and after it, from 1 p.m. until 2:30 p.m. There's a webinar as well that people can stay on and watch the webinar on our screen down there as well, where different people, different health professionals will be talking about the subject of overdose awareness.
The coffee morning, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. in the Courtyard Shopping Centre, Lower Main Street, Letterkenny.
Yeah, and the one thing I would like to thank is our funders through Northwest through the Northwest Drugs Task Force, who are funding this morning for us through social inclusion and through the HSE. Without their help, we wouldn't be able to run events like this.
And who would you suggest, if people are listening to this and want further information or feel that we're talking about them, where's their port of call? Do you guys offer any support, or is it their GP, or what's...
We have two outreach workers who would be able to put people in touch with services who are able to help
right,
as well.
Right, so that's what they'll I'm talking the, about. That I, didn't wanna, yeah. I didn't know, so I didn't want to put you in position. That's good points of contact.
Yeah. CDP have two outreach workers who do help people and their family members as well. And it's one of those things, we try and meet people's needs within the community, and that's one of the needs that's there within the community.
Okay, remember, support, prevent together. It's International Overdose Awareness Day. If anyone wants to contact the CDP, this area, what's the best way of doing so? Maybe a website or a Facebook page?
The CDP Facebook page has a messenger button on as well that people can contact us about the event as well. Yeah,
couldn't be easier. If you have any further inquiries about next Monday, the 31st of August, down at the CDP office, a coffee morning, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And then afterwards, you have the opportunity to sit and view a webinar covering a lot of what we've just been talking about as well. James, as always, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Greg.
We were chatting to Councillor Martin McDermott about defective blocks. A caller says, a few days ago, a house beside me got a total paint job. This morning, there is a for sale sign up at €300,000. I've had enough of them, unscrupulous owners and sellers. I'm presently in the garage making a large sign to say defective blocks in my home. At least anyone entering the state will see the sign and ask the questions. But again, I understand where you're coming from, but like, A, one should not be selling a house that's got defective blocks without letting people know. But B, you will have to test before you buy, surely. The difference in prices from contractors is a lot. Our issue is contractors are getting frustrated waiting on the payments. They're basically an interest-free loan to homeowners. How is that fair? But I also think, you know, like, I presume some of these projects in dealing with clearing the site and all that type of stuff, people put a different value on it. The thing about the market, it's an open free market. And, you know, I would say there are some contractors saying, I'll do it, but, you know, I need a 60 grand on top for all the hassle or for the delays or for whatever it might be. So I would say individual companies are making decisions, because there's plenty of other houses to build as well, right? So they're saying, right, I'll do that, but there's a premium with it. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I presume that's what's going on to some extent. More on houses with DCB or suspected DCB, which are being sold as if not. Estate agents are selling defective houses by stating houses affected by defective blocks with bison slabs upstairs. As the law stands, there's no government legislation outlining what testing is required to inform a potential purchaser of the true condition of both the blocks and foundations. When is action going to be taken to stop the selling of these homes to unsuspecting buyers? How could anyone be an unsuspected buyer, though? I'm sorry to... I mean, like, even if someone tested their house and gave me the results of that test and I was going to pay $250, $300, $350, whatever it might be, I would want my own test. I'm not trusting them. That is the truth. So... ultimately, is the tester, not the tests on the house, unless some people are selling the houses looking for a free test. Surely that's not going on, is it? Hi, Greg. The amount of people that I'm chatting to has to rebuild their homes and are about 60, 70 or 100 grand of their own money short. It's a joke. And this government is sending millions to Ukraine. Only in Ireland would this happen. Only in Ireland would they have enough money to cover it all, by the way. Your money is not being taken from your house to send to Ukraine. That's also happening. And this scheme is billions. They're sending 24 million. But I do take your wider point. That's where we leave it on the show today. I hope you have a fantastic day, everybody.